So now that we have talked about what kinds of visualization representations match what kinds of data and tasks, it's time to talk about how we put these together into multiple views in which we have too much data and too many dimensions to possibly show in one view. Next slide. So as you can see, one of the approaches to multidimensional representation in slide 2 is to use glyphs. We talked about glyphs earlier, and you can plot multiple dimensions on each glyph. But as slide 3 shows you, this approach doesn't go very far once we get into dense representations, because we get terrible problems of a disability to see in the small the patterns that we need to see, and of course we see overplotting. Slide 4. At some point we just have too many points and we run into overplotting. Some of the techniques shown in slide 5 to reduce overplotting, including reducing the size of the objects, changing the fill color, making them more transparent so that we get easier overlay, jittering them so that we move them apart from each other, or even turning them into heat maps where we actually just show the density of the plot rather than the actual individual elements as we see in the lower right-hand side. And we use things like heat maps to do this, but this only goes so far, right? The white space we have challenges this. These kinds of graphical tricks really only go so far for data density, and they really don't work when we're trying to show multiple dimensions. Slide 6. So what are the kinds of approaches that we have to reducing these complexities? Well, we've already talked about deriving new data, that is, choosing a new design idiom or using statistics to develop aggregate data. We can navigate through the information space, as many of you have already shown, in which you change it over time and people step through. This, of course, has the problem that you have to remember what it was before. What we're going to talk about today briefly is how we can reorganize the layout of dimensions, and in more depth, how we can actually split the dimensions into multiple subsets and into coordinated views. And this is how we're using space rather than time to do this. Later on, we'll talk about approaches to actual dimensionality reduction, and in particular, how we show focus and context. But today, we're going to focus on how we actually do this kind of data faceting. Slide 7. So there are several ways to reduce complexity. You can think of it as a way of redistributing the data across the dimensional layout. So we can use dimensional reorganization. I'll briefly talk about dimensional embedding, and then we'll talk about faceting. So in slide 9, there are two visualization forms that are very classic for dimensional reorganization. One is parallel coordinates, which of course is in the standard Cartesian coordinate space, and the other is the familiar radar or star plot, which just uses polar coordinates. In both of these cases, we're able to add an axis, the vertical lines, for each of our dimensions. And this works well if we're trying to see patterns across all of them. Of course, gets completely dense fairly quickly on. Another approach to this is shown in slide 9. It's called dimensional embedding. And so basically what happens is you hierarchically divide your data space into bins, and you use a couple of dimensions to show the first set of bins, and then you recursively divide the screen space based on the bin count for each dimension and sort of drill down into each of these to see the other dimensions. And so you can see clusters and trends repeat manifested as repeat patterns. This works particularly well for the kind of many scatter plot views that you see in slide 10. This is an example of football data from the NFL. And what you can see is we have a lot of different 2D combinations of scatter plots shown in the actual triangular scatter plot matrix. But each one of these allows you to select it and see the views for each of these two dimensions in more detail. Now, these work to a certain extent to address what Bertin calls the three levels of reading. What are these? Well, the elementary level of reading is to be able to detect a single value and calculate a single value. Intermediate levels of reading are what we have been looking at within representations, being able to see the relationships between values. And global is being able to see the relationships of the whole. And this is why we want to be able to have different multiple dimensional representations. And what's the core problem in slide 12? Well, we just have so many dimensions. We have so much data. If you look at the visualization in slide 13, what you see here is many compound idioms and many multidimensional views. So we have rich data with many dimensions. We have a lot of data. It's very hard to map the patterns and relationships across all these sets. And we run into what we call visual fragmentation. If we have too many different visual forms to reinterpret, we can't decode them with relationship to each other. And you can't solely require interaction to just change the views because we have memory and cognition limitations. We have to remember what the view was previously to be able to see this one and to be able to compare them. So this is where we move to, of course, the most common approach to this in slide 14, which is to develop multiple views. Right? And all of these are examples of multiple views. The question of when we are dealing with all these data and all these dimensions is whether we replicate, whether we reduce the data, or whether we overlay the data. If we're always replacing the data, that's too much reliance on memory. That's the problem with changing it all the time with interactions and filters, right? You're relying too much on what was there before. If we always replicate, we have far too many windows. We can't just have different forms for everything. And if we try to overlay, as we saw in some of the previous displays, we just get too much clutter. So the general approach to expanding the amount of data we can show without introducing too much complexity is to facet the visualizations or the different views. And we're going to talk about several methods to do this. Now in slide 15, we see the same data using two different decodings for part whole. These are data that show the influence of each level of government on factors controlling the housing allocation and taxation. So if what I want to be able to see is different views of the same data, we keep the data constant, we change the encoding to tease out different relationships. Slide 16 shows a slightly different version of this. Here I've got the same data, but at different levels of detail, but I'm using different encoding. So these are highlighting trends on the left, distribution of data on the right. So I am actually showing different levels of the detail faceted, but they are the same data. And you'll note that it's hard to relate these because I only have labels to relate them. I'm not actually using color. So this is not a great multiple visualization. Slide 17 is that famous IRIS data set we've talked about. It's the same encoding, but here what I've done is split the data out. So I've subsetted it by dimension. I have four separate scatter plots that are showing me each of the 2x2 combinations for each of the dimensions. So now I'm able to compare the relationships by each of these 2x2. So this is the same encoding, different subsets of the data. And in slide 18, this is different subsets of the data and different encoding of the data, and they all need to be linked together. These are very common. This is an example of a pretty classic information dashboard. So if we want to think about this formally, we think about this in terms of data and view facets. Slide 19. In this design choice of encoding means that we handle things in a particular way based on what it is we want to split. So how do we pick these multiform views? Well, we can either decide to facet the data by subsetting it, or we can decide to facet the view by splitting it out. So here is just our 2D dimension of data and encoding. If I have the same encoding, but I'm subsetting the data, I'm probably looking at things like overview and detail. But if I have the same encoding and I'm not subsetting the data, I'm splitting it into small multiples. Similarly, if I use all the data but different encoding, that's a series of multiform encoding. If I use a subset of the data, right, I share the data between it, I have multiform data with overview and detail. And of course, I wouldn't have no commonality between the data and the encoding. so that would work, right? So the design choice of these views means that we share some aspects of the visual encoding and some aspects of the data, or some aspects of the data between the two views. So in slide 20 now, we can look at an example of overview and detail in which I'm using the same coding, but I'm looking at a subset of the data, right? So these are very familiar to anybody who's used mapping tools. On the right-hand side, we can see the inset window showing detail and over the larger window showing the overview. In the graph on the left-hand side, I'm able to pull out more detail with the inset window from the overview. So this is an example of subset of data, same encoding, shared encoding. On slide 21, now I have a subset of the data and I have a subset, I have a shared, a different encoding. So I have two map encodings for the overview, but my detail is showed in the graph down here. So now I have multiform as well as overview and detail. So I'm absolutely looking at the split with both the encoding and with the data. Let's go back and talk about the basics. Perhaps one of the most common ways to deal with extra dimensional complexity is to subset the dimensions. And that's where we keep the same data, but we split it by dimension across these multiple linked views. And we do these in several different ways. We do small multiples, trellis displays, or scatterplot matrices. And we'll cover each of these. So how do small multiples work? Small multiples work by simply splitting the dimensions across multiple views. So here is an example from Robert Kosara of a visualization that's attempting to show the amount of money that is spent each year by the United States on different kinds of ailments in their healthcare system. Of course, we all know this is a pie chart. It's pretty hard to see what's going on here. Now look at the difference in slide 24. What's happened is we've taken each of the dimensions, so the levels of the dimension of the healthcare, so all the way from the 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, there are seven levels of this dimension, and we've split this, so we've taken each dimension and split it into its own graph, its own line graph across. So I can now see the different levels. They are sharing an x-axis. So remember, we talked about alignment. The obvious thing we do in this case is that we break the all must be aligned on the same axis. So the compromise you make here is we share it on the x-axis, which is age, which shows us where the bulk of spending happens in terms of the ages of the patients. And we replicate the y-axis, so this is a non-aligned but same value axis as we go along the top. This is much clearer than the pie chart that we saw before, and a very, very common visualization technique. So small multiples, as laid out in slide 25, use the same encoding to show different slices of a data set. And what this lets us do is get all of the levels of the dimension, the rich dimensional data, installed without having to show the single overly complex chart. And the advantage of this is that you're already having people sort of perceptually decoding this. They're using the same decoding mechanisms. So it gives you very efficient summaries of the data. People can focus on changes in the data as opposed to changes in the graphical view, right? So, and we're sensitive to these small changes even when the views are very small. You can see in the visualization in the top right that we can see some of the different changes in the trend diagrams, even though they're particularly small. Now let's go back to the stream graph in slide 26. Remember, we talked about this already and it was in one of your readings. So this is showing the unemployment figures in the United States as a stacked graph over the years by sector. And so we have a number of different sectors shown by color. Now, this is actually not that good. Stack graphs don't show negative numbers, and they're meaningless for certain kinds of data. But mostly it's because stacking makes it difficult to interpret the trends because you're seeing these accumulated issues of the trends stacking on top of other trends. They don't have any kind of shared axis, and it's very difficult to interpret them. So we can do this much more efficiently in slide 27 by actually just breaking these out into small multiples. So again, I've split that dimensional data for each level of the dimension. Here we now have, because we are not, we don't have enough room to put them all in one shared x-axis, I actually have them in two groups where the x-axis is shared, and the y-axis again is replicated for each one. But because they're fairly similar, and I'm not asking people to compute the exact numbers, I'm very much able to see the patterns in these kinds of small multiples. So the key thing to notice about this is that we split on this categorical dimension. It takes up more space. It does break this notion of the shared axis a little bit, but it does reduce the alignment judgment because they're all very similar. Slide 28. So back to our format, small multiples use the same encoding, but they subset the data. So they split the data into subsets and then encode it similarly. Now, a variant of small multiples are horizon graphs, in which we actually can split the graph and start to fold it over on itself. And I will talk about horizon graphs a little bit in class. You will see that as you go through the different stages of the horizon graph, so on the top, we see employment figures are negative and positive. The next graph down, we see what happened is they actually split the graph and overlaid it. And finally, in the bottom graph, we see that they've split it again. And we can see that these graphs are actually sort of composited, and we start to see the patterns. And the study that Jeff Hare and his students did with this showed that the people were actually able to interpret the bottom graph very effectively, but you will note it takes way less space than the previous first graph that we saw. Slide 30. A variant of small multiples and of the one-dimensional ones we've seen are trellis plots. And trellis plots are quite simply small multiple subsets that split across more than one dimension. So here I have four small multiples, and I've split them on age and gender. And so trellis visualizations let you see recognize similarities and differences between not only between the levels of a category, but also between different categories. Slide 31 shows a fairly complicated set of trellis plots, right? But the key thing about these small multiples is that we can sort them to see different patterns of the data. So how you decide what your variables are, what your dimensions are to split this, enables you to sort them along the different values of those variables to see the patterns in the data. Slide 32. So small multiples are often called the most underused visualization solution because they're so very powerful, but there are some issues with them. One of the things that's really critical for small multiples is at some point you need to align the dimensions properly. So the placement is critical. The other thing is that they must share the same scales and shapes and measures. So you can't make them too complicated. You must keep them simple. As soon as they get complicated, as soon as the scales of the axes change, the utility of the small multiple is severely reduced. Slide 33. A common variant of small multiples is used for scatter plots. And of course, with scatter plots, we can see, with a scatter plot, we see two variables, two quantitative variables compared to each other. But a lot of the time, you want to be able to compare all of your quantitative variables because you have an n-dimensional data set. So we can subset the data, again, into categories to compare the patterns between subsets. And then we can lay these out in a sequential grid or a 2D ordered grid, like a scatter plot matrix. And this is an example of the scatter plot matrix of the car data with miles per gallon, acceleration, displacement, horsepower, and weight that we saw in the parallel coordinates earlier on. And you can see that we can examine the different levels, in the different patterns in each of the individual scatter plots. Slide 34. So scatter plot matrices allow us to see all the pairwise plots if we have the correct interaction techniques, which I will talk about shortly. We can see the linkage between the views, and we can see the clusters and the trends and the correlations pretty readily between the views. Now, scatterplot matrices only make sense if we lay them out effectively, as in slide 35. So this more effective one does a little bit of a sacrifice of alignment. It gets rid of the what we call the unity matrices in between. It reduces the density, and it allows us to see the relationships more clearly. So with a scatter plot matrix, you want to be careful to sort of align your density properly. Slide 36. So let's talk to now about multiform views, which are the backbone of most visualization systems, particularly visual analytics systems, right? Here we see two examples of visual analytics systems in which there are a variety of different views that can be put together, and these are built as what's called snap-together visualizations. So very much like building a dashboard in Tableau, as you add another visualization, you connect it using the data and using interaction techniques to be able to see different views of your data in a coordinated system. Slide 37. Here's an example of some of the first brushing techniques that were developed for multiform views, right? Remember that spatial position is the strongest encoding, so you want to make sure that as you distribute your data across these different distributions, that you align yourself spatially, that the alignment is what matters. So for example, I have separated the two, but we have separated the two bar charts here because they don't share the same alignment. So we have broken them with the two scatter plots in the middle, which breaks any assumption that the bar charts are the same. This is from Eichenwills in 95, and it's all baseball data. So we see how long players have been in the majors, what some of their statistics are, what their salaries are, what their average career points are versus batting, and how these all distribute across the positions played. Now, the critical thing to see here is that we are using a technique called linking, which is related to brushing. And that is, when I select a subset of data in one of these views, the related data in all of the other views brush appropriately. So brushing and linking are critical to multiform views to be able to see all the other related data points that are associated with a selection that is made in one or more of your views. Slide 38. Now, multiform views are the basis of the well-known information dashboard. And there's a lot of issues around information dashboards and how you use the overall space. There are issues of alignment and legibility and a careful assignment of the data to the idioms. For example, in this dashboard, if you're using the part-whole relationship of the pie, why do you need to have stacked charts that are sort of removed from it on the other side and down below of the visualization as opposed to close enough to facilitate comparison? So the spatial integration is not very clear. And then you have to be careful about how you associate this to enable people to get the best impact of those sort of complicated relationships across the dimensions and the views. Stephen Few has an excellent initial book on dashboard design, although the design challenges for dashboard are legion as people are using them in more contexts and expecting different things about them. And we're going to talk a little bit about dashboards later in the course. But right now, slide 39, what do we think a dashboard is? Well, Few says that a dashboard is a visual display of the most important information needed to achieve one or more objectives, available on a single screen so we can see the information at a glance. And so while dashboards are a good deal more complicated than this now, this is an excellent working definition for you to think about how you actually structure your joint information together. In slide 40, we see a very common Tableau dashboard. What is it that Tableau people say are the critical things for the dashboard? Visual and consistent displays. The information that you show is tied to specific objectives. It's available on a single screen. It should convey the message at a glance. And to do that, it needs to have spatial integration and good association of the views. Don't use widely different color coding, right? Make sure you use the same color coding. If you have two visual idioms, like in these two column charts that are in the middle of this view, make sure you align them so that people can compare them. If you need to break that relationship, move one of those away. Right? So dashboards are very common, very powerful. They may be only the first view of the information. They are increasingly used as portals to other information. But you'll note that it's the information that you need to see together to decide where you go from there in your visual analytics systems. Slide 41. Now, one last approach to how you put data together is to overlay your facets. We've talked to date about side-by-side alignment of view and data facets. We can overlay them, and as you know from our lecture last week in maps, they're very common in spatial data, but there are other approaches. In slide 42, we see an example of small multiples and multiform in which the hairball graph, network graph on the left-hand side, was split into substrates. And rather than just draw lines between everything, what they did was to say, here are all the data at each level of the hierarchy, and as you select them, here is how they are connected to other elements in the hierarchy. So this is one example of layering by faceting the data into substrates. Slide 43 shows another more common one, and that is, here I have an overlay facet, which is my line graph, and I also have a facet, which is my bar chart. And this is fairly common, as we've seen in time plots. What are the issues here? You need to make sure that if the axis is not related, in other words, if the axis is different, that you have multiple axes. You can't do too many overlays with facets because we're not able to decode them. You want to be very clear that you are not associating one visualization with the wrong scale or the wrong axis. So slide 44. When we are overlaying, then, our design choices are, how do you partition the elements? How many layers do we have? And how important is it that we can determine the layers? Right? Are they semantically related as they were when we looked at the substrates? How do you make them distinguishable? And are they static or dynamic? In other words, are more data coming in? So you have to be careful with superimposition, because you can't just say we're going to throw in extra layers. If it's important that people can distinguish what the layers are, that they mean something, right? Then you have to be able to pull those apart. 2 to 3 layers is as much as you're going to get. On the other hand, if you're only using them as a way for information hierarchy, as we saw earlier on with the transparency discussion, you probably have a little more representational room. So in slide 45, let's talk about what the guidelines are for using multiple views in information visualization. And this comes from a very early paper, but the guidelines are still very relevant, from Baldonado and Woodruff. In slide 46, what are they? There are 8 guidelines. First is the rule of diversity. If you have a diversity of attributes, use multiple views. You can't possibly put them all into one. But coming along with this is complementarity. Multiple views should bring out correlations or disparities in the data, right? The rule of decomposition says it's divide and conquer. We split the data. We will want help people visualize relevant chunks of the complex data. We split data into small multiples when we want them to be able to see the different patterns. Going along with all this is what they call the rule of parsimony. Really, use multiple views minimally. If you have far too many multiple views, you are no longer able to see the forest for the trees. Slide 47. As Munzner points out in her book, you have to balance the spatial benefits of laying it out with the temporal benefits of being able to see change and step through change. Remember, with change, with using filters and animations and navigating through views, you get to explore and see how things change, but you have to remember what was there before. Spatial coincidence helps us see these differences, but of course is limited in the amount that we can show. You must use cues, you must use brushing and linking and highlighting cues to make the relationships between the different data apparent. Poorly brushed and linked multiple views are next to useless. You also want to keep the views consistent. changes in one must reflect changes in the other. And finally, highlighting and proper alignment is really critical to support both good problem solving and to manage attention.